I'm Linda De Castiger and I'm Director of Public Health for NHS Greater Glasgow and Clyde. And in this seminar, we're going to talk about justice for women. And we're going to talk about the Commission for Women Offenders that I was part of. But one of the recommendations on the Commission was to establish community justice centres. So along with me are colleagues from Tomorrow's Women, the Community Justice Centre in Glasgow, who are going to talk about their experience of working in and also using that centre. Well, thanks very much. It is a real privilege to be here at these seminars because having been in the audience, they're always of such a high standard. And I'm well aware that I was a late substitute for somebody who had to pull out at the last minute. And as they say, there's only one thing worse than being second choice, and that's never to be anybody's choice. So we're very pleased to be here. And this is going to be a bit different, this seminar. I was asked to talk about the work that I've done over the last few years in the Commission for Women Offenders and then as chair of the steering group for the Women's Justice Centre here in Glasgow. But I wanted to give you a real flavour of what Tomorrow's Women is all about. Tomorrow's Women is the name of the Community Justice Centre in Glasgow. And so colleagues who work there and who use the centre are going to be speaking in the second half of this seminar. But I wanted to start with a confession. And the confession is that when I would sit in the audience where you are and people would talk about assets-based approaches, sometimes I was quite sceptical. And I was sceptical because I'd think, well, assets-based approaches, that's all very well for many people. But say you've been born and had very poor attachment, poor parenting, had to suffer violence and abuse and neglect in your childhood, had a poor experience of the education system, were unemployed, lived in a rubbish house, had addictions problems, ended up going to prison. What assets did you have? But like George Berkeley, who said the same principles which at first view lead to scepticism, pursued to a certain point, bring men back to common sense, I've had to reevaluate that scepticism. Because the work I did visiting services as part of the Commission for Women's Offenders, 218 in this very city, seeing how they work in Tomorrow's Women, where women are involved in the decisions about how they're looked after, about what happens to them, where they are invited to really build in their assets, I've had to reevaluate and think that is the only thing that's going to make a difference, is working in that way. So I was inspired to think differently, and I hope this afternoon you too will be inspired. But where did this all start? Well, as Andrew has told you, I was asked to be a member of the Commission for Women Offenders. And it was the then Justice Cabinet Secretary for Justice, Kenny McCaskill, who set up this independent commission. And you often think of commissions as being rows and, you know, tables with lots and lots of people around the table. This was just three of us on this commission, chaired by Eilish Angelini, myself, and and Sheriff Danny Scullion, who's a sheriff in the west of Scotland. And this was the remit that we were given, which you can see was no mean feat, to look at how to improve outcomes, how to stop that increase in the prison population. But importantly, Andrew mentioned pragmatic, to come up with practical measures to change the outcomes and prevent reoffending. You'll see there that prevention was not part of the remit, although everybody talked to us about how important early years were and trying to work in a more preventive way, but we weren't asked to look at that. We had quite a short timescale to do it, only about 8 months, and we all had our day jobs. And it was Andrew Fraser, the then medical director of the Scottish Prison Service, that said to me, actually, you could report tomorrow. Just ask the government to implement the recommendations of all the previous reports on this topic. And he was right, there had been many previous reports, the Corston report, the McLeish report. But we wanted to understand why had they not been implemented, what had been missing in order to see these recommendations implemented. And the other learning for me that I would want to pass on to you, if you ever get asked to be on a commission like this, grab it with both hands. It was a fantastic experience for me to work in a small group with people from different backgrounds and perspectives, and to do work that was not normally part of my day-to-day work. And I learned a lot from Eilish herself. She's a very, very smart woman, but she's also incredibly nice. My friends laugh at me. They think if I say, they ask me about someone and I say, yeah, they're very nice, I'm usually, there's a but, or it's, I can't think of anything more interesting to say about them. But actually, she is very, very effective because of her manner, because the way she respects people, works with them, and is so nice and friendly to everybody. And me coming from the macho NHS culture of just get it done and we'll performance manage you and I'll shout louder than you, and it was a very refreshing change. So the background was that the female prison population had doubled in the previous decade, and that increase had been sharper than for men, so they now were 5% of the prison population. But the increase was more for older women. In the criminal justice system, you're an older woman if you're over 30, I'm afraid to say. But for the younger women, it had reduced. But of all the women in prison, at any one time, a quarter of them are on remand. And yet only 30% of them go on to have a custodial sentence. So while this is not the driver for the increase in the prison population, it certainly seemed an important area to try and do something about. 75% of custodial sentences are short sentences, and we know they don't prevent reoffending. And many people said to us, oh, it's an increase in violent offences in women. There has not been the same reduction in violent offences in women as there has been in men, but it still is a lower percentage at 31% than for men, which is a higher percentage. But other crimes, what are seen as lower level crimes, drugs-related offences or crimes against public justice, not turning up for your bail hearing, not turning up for court, they are much more common in women. And again, that's not the driver of the increase, but it seems a very important area to try and concentrate alternatives to custody for these women. And when you look at what is the drivers, it's complex, and we never really got to the bottom of why has the prison population doubled. I think some of it is we're better at catching people, we're better at successful prosecutions. But we heard many people saying to us, you're more likely to get a custodial sentence if you're a woman. If a man's violent, it's not seen as so bad for a woman, oh, well, then you're more likely to be sent to prison. We saw no evidence for that. The sheriffs we spoke to said they tried everything to prevent a custodial sentence. And if you look at the percentage of custodial sentences for every group of crime, regardless of crime history, it is lower for women. But as we've just been talking about, women have very particular needs, women offenders. They often have high levels of trauma and stress in their background. We met with many women, both in prison and in community services, and I think I can count in the fingers of one hand the numbers who did not say they'd history of abuse or violence. If they hadn't been victims of violence, they'd witnessed violence in their home. So many of these women have mental health problems, and many of them have addiction problems, as you can see here. And when a man goes into prison, there's often a woman keeping the tenancy of the house or looking after the children. 95% of children of men who go to prison are still looked after by their mother. For women, it's less than 1 in 5. So she often loses touch with her children, loses custody of her children. So it's got implications for her family as well as herself. And she often loses connections with her community. When a woman goes into prison, she loses tenancy of her house. And maybe like me, you just assumed somebody packed up her belongings and stored them somewhere. That's not the case. It all gets destroyed. It all goes. She comes back out of prison to nothing. Her possessions have gone. She often has lost contact with her family and her community. As well as, just before I pass on, as well as these statistics which tell a story, the stories women told us told an even more sad story. And you hear about myths such as Women come out of prison, they have no stable housing, their lives are so chaotic that they'll actually commit a crime to get back into prison. Women told us that story. The fact that a woman would say, I'd rather sleep rough under a bridge than in a hostel with its violence and its addictions, women told us that story. Nobody was there to meet me at the gate when I came out of prison. Many women said that to us. They come out with their liberation grant. The nearest stop is the off licence. They've 6 weeks to wait for their benefits. And we wonder why they start shoplifting again. We heard that story frequently. And the story we heard from the prison service was the huge variability of what was available to women. And they didn't always know who to contact or what the structure was around the country. We estimated that there were over 200 different agencies delivering services for women when they came out of prison, with varying funding regimes and unsustainability. So no wonder it was difficult for the prison service. The main prison, as you know, is Corton Vale, built in 1975 for 100, now with capacity for over 375. And unlike even a hospital, which can eventually close its doors if it's full and send patients elsewhere, a prison can never really close its doors. They've got to take people that are sent from the courts. And we visited, as well as Corton Vale, Greenock and Aberdeen at that time, which was a very old Victorian building. But women would often say the regimes there, the structure, the attitude of prison officers meant that actually they appreciated going to these prisons regardless of their very poor environments. So the high prevalence of mental health issues, our impression and our the evidence we heard was that women with severe and enduring mental illness got well cared for, both in emergencies and routinely. I'm sure some of you here will have an example that's different than that, but that was our experience. It's the women with complex post-traumatic stress disorder, borderline personality disorder, antisocial personality disorder, or lower level depression and anxiety that get very poorly cared for. And I just wanted to remind you of some of the NICE guidelines on the management of borderline personality disorder, not because we're not giving women the right tablets or therapy, but actually if you look at the guidelines of what works in management, it helps us think how to design services that you will hear about in just a few minutes. That women need to be actively involved in the decisions about them. That the development of these trusted, optimistic relationships are important for managing the difficult behaviour, the difficult coping, the tendency to self-harm that you see in women with this condition. That they should not be excluded from services because of that label of borderline personality disorder. And importantly, that you need to predict transition, structure it, phase it, and involve people in how that's going to happen so it doesn't re-trigger the trauma that they have experienced in the past. And if you look at what works in reducing reoffending, it's services that take that gender-responsive, trauma-informed approach, and Anne's going to say a bit more about that. But there's a lot we don't know whether it works. We think it should work, but there's still a lot of research required on what works. So the Commission made recommendations in all these different areas, and if I had an hour and a half, I'd speak to you about each and every one, but many of you will have read that report, and I just want to concentrate on the areas that relate to the big issues, the big recommendations, and the ones about community justice centres. These have been found to be successful in England and internationally to deliver intensive interventions to support women, but also challenge their offending and challenge their behaviour. And very importantly, to bring together the intensive mentoring so that women can be supported on a practical day-to-day basis to keep appointments, to access services, but also that they get the practical support that you're going to hear about, help with housing, benefits, etc. We recommended that Corton Vale should be demolished and a new, smaller specialist prison with a much better environment should be built. And in order to make it work, we recommended there should be a national body for community justice and a board that brought together the prisons and community justice. And the rationale for this was in order to shift resources into prevention so that we were able to say, well, if we can reduce reoffending, we can move resources from one part of the system to the other. The press coverage of the Commission's report was good. People weren't saying you're being soft on crime, more women should go to jail. People understood the issues that we were talking about. And I think that was partly that Eilish had done a lot of work with journalists, taking them to Corton Vale, taking them to services like 218 here in Glasgow. And the government response was positive too, accepting most of the recommendations. The one they didn't accept, because they said there's already a lot of work going on in this, was a review of services for women with borderline personality disorder. I think that's still required. Here in Glasgow, we have an excellent trauma service and service within our homeless health team, but it's tiny and there are still gaps in services for women with these problems. The government has just published its recommendations around the new model for community justice. So the planning will be and the strategy locally will be organised by community planning partnerships. The rationale for not accepting the recommendations of the Commission were that you would lose too much of the local connections by having a national body. And while I accept that, I hope that the new organisation to provide leadership and support and guidance, Community Justice Scotland, can indeed provide that leadership that will stop the variability we found in the Commission and ensure sustainable resourcing of voluntary organisations, etc., that provide such good support for women. And I have optimism, but it will need to be strong to be able to do that, and the hub of innovation, learning and development to help us understand what works. And then, they had an announcement that there'd be a big new prison in Inverclyde, but sense took over. And although another big prison is not being built, there is, at the moment, a discussion on redefining custody for women. So the proposals are a small specialist prison, but with the regional units, mainly for remand, but also for women that can, in shorter sentences, stay connected with their local communities. And I'm really glad to see that they're talking about community-based small residential units. The number of people in custody here is still about the same number as we've currently got. So I would still like to see us have ways of shifting resources more into prevention and community services. And I hope tomorrow's women will eventually move into that role as it develops its role. And it does show such great potential, which you're just about to hear more about. So I'm now going to start introducing a range of colleagues. Maybe you'll all introduce each other rather than I come back up to introduce you. But Anne Gallagher is the team leader who has been very instrumental in setting up and running Tomorrow's Women. So she's going to now come and tell you how it actually works. Thanks.
Thanks, Linda, for that great introduction. And it's a pleasure to be here. And I hope that by the end of this, between myself and my colleagues and Tracy or Sefish, you'll be able to agree with us that we think that this is definitely the way forward in relation to female offenders. And I thought that I would start with a very positive slide of what women have said. I usually end with this slide, but I thought I would start off by saying that we're well into a year now of running the centre, and for you can see yourself some of the way that what women have got out of our centre. I think it is just evidence for us that it is the right way forward. To date, we've received 190 referrals. We are working with the most prolific, difficult-to-engage offenders in the whole of Glasgow, who also are the most vulnerable women with the most complex needs. And I think that for women to see this is how they've received the centre and what we've got to offer them, I think is testament not only to the workers but also to what women have put into the centre as well. Obviously, as Linda said, that there are many, many multiple issues that women are dealing with, and I'm not going to go through all of them, but just to basically say that women are dealing with more than one, two or three issues when they come to us. And if I can just give you some stats for the centre, of 155 women, and they're quite similar to the national stats, almost 80% have cited mental health as an issue for them, almost 80% substance misuse issues. Over three quarters of the women that we're working with have scored high or very high on the Criminal Justice Risk Assessment, LSEMI scores. Three quarters of our women are referred from Criminal Justice and one quarter from Scottish Prison Service. The most common offence, again, is very similar to national, which I think was a bit of a surprise for us as well, was non-sexual crimes of violence, severe assault and robbery, and other crimes, drug misuse, prostitution, but the most serious was assault, robbery, which I think was quite a surprise to us. And I think this stat sees it all. Of 155 women, only 18 of them have their own tenancy. That means their own place that they can call home. And as Linda said, when they come out of prison, they've no money, they've nowhere to stay. Their belongings usually are chipped out somewhere. So they've literally come to us with nothing. And that's how, and that's not me being dramatic, that's the absolute reality of working with the women that we are working with. And of 80 women who have children, only 13 of them have contact with their children. The rest don't have any contact with them. And I think, again, that's quite a startling figure. What approach did we take? And our team is a multi-agency team, and we're made up of mental health nurses, social workers, social care workers, a clinical psychologist, our prison officer who's on secondment from Greenock Prison, and Andrea, a housing advisor from Glasgow Housing Association. And I think I wasn't involved in the pre-planning of the centre and what staff we would need, but I think it's absolute accurate and appropriate that the staff that we do have, because we are dealing with so many of the issues. We're talking about very, very, very basic needs for women, needs that we might take for granted, food and shelter and money. And when women come there, it's no wonder they go right back into jail. So the ingredients that we would say that have worked for us, absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt, a safe environment for women. The trauma model, and I'll talk about that in a wee minute, but I think that probably all of these ingredients are crucial, and it's what have made the positive outcomes that we've had. But I do want to just focus on three of them, because I think that they are probably the most influential ones, and it's the trauma model, multi-agency working and service user involvement. We work from a three-stage trauma model, particularly from stage one, which is establishing safety for women, and our psychologist works from stage two, which is mourning and grieving, and stage three, which we all work from, is reconnection with family, with self, with communities. And the principles underlying, as you can see there again, it's safety, trust, strength-based model as well, and that we also work with. But you're looking at the effects of trauma on women, and the range there from disassociation, physical health problems, mental health problems, not being able to connect with anyone, that the effects are long-lasting. And when I say that we work mostly from stage one, which is establishing safety, it's establishing safety in many different areas of a woman's life, establishing safety in relation to housing, relationships, her emotions, substance misuse, and that is what probably is taking the certainly for us and certainly for women, building up trust and being able to establish that safety as long term. That is one of the lessons that we have learned. It is not an easy fix. You're talking about women who are coming with multiple issues, who find it very, very difficult to trust. Most of our work is done out with the centre until women feel confident and able enough to come into the centre. It's a massive step for them to come in. Most of them have been social worked to death. Most of them have been in and out of prison so many times. They've heard it all before. They've had to tell their story so many times to so many different agencies. And it is extremely frustrating for them, you know. So one of the major ingredients is going and knocking on doors and talking to women and building up that trust. And we are now beginning to see the benefits of building up that trust, but it is a long, long, difficult process. We're all very experienced workers in our own field, but I think that when you hear from Andrea and Mark, I'm sure that they'll also be agreeing with me that it is, we probably underestimated what women have to go through and the complex issues that they do deal with. The intervention, so when I talk about establishing safety, it is a very, very practical intervention. As I said, it's establishing safety in all different areas of a woman's life, and we can't do that as a team. We also link very, very closely with partner agencies wherever that woman is living. We have multi-agency case discussions. We are passing through. And eventually what we want women to do is be able to feel part of a community, to be able to contribute to that community. And the starting point is where we're working with them. And there are so many areas of a woman's life that she is dealing with. And again, Andrea and Mark will tell you some of their experience in working with women in relation to housing and in relation to women coming out of prison. The interventions, you can see yourself, we've got duty on a daily basis, we've got drop-in, we've got a closed toiletries food bank, we have drop-in sessions from legal advice services, money matters. There's a whole range of interventions that we one-to-one support, group work. But at the heart of that is what the woman wants. The service user for us is at the heart of everything we're doing. So we talk to women and say, where do you want to be? What is it you need? The woman is central in any case discussion we're having as well. You know, so it's not about telling her what she needs. She's telling us what she needs. It's in a very much an empowerment model that we're working from. Multi-agency working is the second factor that I want to talk about in relation to how we operate. This has been absolutely crucial. We've all come from different professional backgrounds, but we all have the same shared visions and common goals. We also, the sharing of knowledge and breaking down barriers has been fantastic for us to be able to support women the way that we have been able to support them. And I don't want to say any more just now because I want Andrea and Mark to be able to say what their experience has been of multi-agency working, but it's something that we absolutely would not be able to do as a single agency. And I would invite Andrea just now to talk about some of the experiences that she's had working in a multi-agency team with a client group that we're working with.
There. As you've kind of heard, I'm Andrea. I'm the housing advisor at Tomorrow's Women. I came into Tomorrow's Women from a job dealing with tenancy sustainment for one of Europe's kind of largest social landlords. And I thought my 20 years plus social housing experience would have kind of put me in good stead, you know, for this job. However, I kind of very quickly realised that as much as I was used to dealing with some of our society's kind of worst affected in terms of housing, health, finances, employability, crime, and customers who have got kind of drugs or alcohol dependencies, I probably wasn't quite ready for the levels of complexities that the women, you know, obviously women's support needs that would be referred to our centre. Our team at Tomorrow's Women is multifunctional, you've kind of heard that a couple of times now. Vast experience in health, social work, addictions, housing and mental health. Our team very quickly found that having access and quick access to areas of information about the women that we're working with made such a big difference to our job and our roles at Tomorrow's Women, which was ultimately, you know, a good outcome for the women that we're working with. My main remit was to advocate for women in relation to housing issues, and this very quickly became actually homelessness and housing issues. And my skills from being able to network has been put to the test, I'll tell you. Building up a rapport with homelessness services has been invaluable to our service at Tomorrow's Women. And the majority of homelessness hostels and women's projects are aware of Tomorrow's Women, who we are and what our centre carries out. They're familiar with the staff at Tomorrow's Women, and good working relations have been built up over the last year. It has been crucial to ensure that protocols have been made and put in place when starting up a new project, as you can imagine. And as much as we've made great inroads to this, working with, you know, the kind of three Glasgow area homeless casework teams and the prison casework team, there's still obviously a long way to go. We're still at kind of, you know, the early stages. In order for me to ensure that, you know, I could and was able to support women as well as advocate and negotiate for them, I enrolled in a lot of job-specific training such as trauma training, personality disorder and self-harm, to name a few. These skills have been invaluable to me. Being able to have instant access to the likes of a senior mental health nurse or a psychiatric nurse or a psychiatrist to discuss women's mental health issues and how the, you know, obviously the impact and the way that these, you know, the women we're working with, how they think, the way that they act, the way they react, and obviously how they process information, etc., has been a fantastic tool for me. As Anne previously mentioned, 80% of the women that we work with have some type of mental health issue. Despite my experience in the social housing sector, even I encounter barriers when advocating on behalf of women I've been working with. Therefore, is it any wonder that, you know, women find the homelessness and housing system frustrating? And this is, you know, why they come maybe across as being difficult when they encounter barrier after barrier after barrier. An example of a case that is a successful outcome that I've been working on, I'll just kind of quickly go over, is a young woman who had her own tenancy with Shettleston Housing Association. However, at the point where I was asked by a criminal justice worker if I could come in and offer any assistance, she was in Parkhead Hospital recovering from a severe mental health breakdown. She was due to be discharged from hospital, however, due to real threats of violence from a local male within the community who was involved in drug dealing, prostitution of women and various other illegal activities within the community that she had been staying, it was agreed that she could no longer return to this tenancy. Shettleston Housing Association were great, however, they could only offer her a local move as they don't cover a vast area and it would still not remove her from the danger. We sat down and we spoke to the lady and we asked her how we could help her, what would help her, you know, and it very kind of quickly materialised that she had good support. She had good family support in the Maryhill area, and this is kind of actually where she was brought up. I've got good contacts with Queen's Cross Housing Association, and we discussed, you know, the case with them, and after a couple of meetings, you know, with the staff from there and the women and her support, with both Shettleston Housing Association and Queen's Cross Housing Association, it was agreed that Queen's Cross Housing Association would take the woman on as a management transfer and find her a property in the Maryhill area. This all went ahead, and now just short of a year, she has sustained her new tenancy without any issues. This woman is still engaging with our service at Tomorrow's Women, and it's been an absolute amazing outcome watching how this shy, vulnerable, timid woman has become a more confident individual and is making positive plans for her future. And I've kind of added just in here today, in fact, I found out today that she's an interview for the Grow Cafe tomorrow. Most of the women I've supported for over the past year have been great to work with and an inspiration actually for me. For they have overcome so many difficulties and traumatic experiences that you and I probably couldn't even begin to imagine. And for their lives, I see them as life's true survivors. Finally, we do have an exception to the kind of mostly female staffing rule, and he's a positive male role model. When I said this a couple of times to myself, I kept saying positive male model. positive male role model. And I'll hand you over to Mark Sprott. And I know I'm never going to live saying that down now. Mark Sprott, who's a secondee from the Scottish Prison Service.
Good afternoon. Like Andrea, I too have over 20 years' experience in the prison service working with offenders. I've seen them come and go over the years, sometimes days between their sentences, and not actually looking beyond the sentences. I've come from closed conditions where the staff are in control and a structured routine, but working at Tomorrow's Women, dealing with the same offenders, it was a totally different experience, travelling the journey with them. I wasn't ready for the chaos that was involved with their lives, more so coming from that structure of the prison. I found myself personally getting really frustrated when supporting and advocating for them with housing and the Department of Works and different agencies. I couldn't imagine how frustrating it was for them. If I was getting so frustrated, the cumulative effects of getting released from prison and trying to sort out these issues, the effects it was having on their self-esteem, their confidence and their mental well-being, I observed the frustration change from anxiety to anger to hopelessness with some of the service users I was working with no faith in anything, nothing was going to change, and they'd prefer to go back to prison. That's when the penny dropped for me. I realised why over the years so many were returning to prison. What they've got to go through. So as part of the monster services team, I'm involved in early interventions within the prison with new referrals. Initially, it's building up relationships with the service user and seeing if there's any practical steps that can be taken before the release. Maintaining contact with them on a regular basis, building up the trust and liaising with other partners and services whilst they're in custody, and keeping the service user informed. Being an officer gives me easy access in the prison, so I can pick up keys and wander around the prison and maintain that contact a lot easier. So eventually carrying out gate pickups and liberation with some of my other colleagues and supporting them throughout the day, accessing their housing, casework, teams, addiction services and any other specified needs, as well as emotional and motivational support. Unfortunately, some of our service users return to custody, and part of my role is then to maintain communications links with them as well as the prison staff. My role ensured that access to the women without delay has circumvented the needs for to seek permissions to get that, so we can access them very quickly, because all the permissions are already in place for a smoother process when planning and preparing the women returning to the community or likewise going back to custody. It's crucial when ensuring that the treatment and the care plans are maintained for the women when coming out or returning to custody. I was thinking, I hadn't prepared one, but I was just thinking, listening to Anne again and listening to Andrea, one of the women was working in custody before she got out. She was in an abusive relationship, a tentative abusive relationship, and the man had was looking after her cat and decided just to move into her house. She was one of the lucky ones that had a house, and we'd done a lot of safety planning work with her for getting out with this man, and she didn't want a gate pickup because the man was picking her up on release from prison. Turned out she was back in custody within 24 hours after getting beaten. She was in for another few months. We'd done a lot of work with her, getting out again, eventually affecting the man getting evicted from a property for her being released from prison, which has kept her safe, and she's still safe this day working with the service. So I was thinking, just it was a wee thought I had there. I thought it was very pertinent about keeping them safe. It's most of the work we're doing is really practical, basic practical work. And I think for me, working in the multidisciplinary team, it's the information sharing, the shared protocols, and getting access to health service information, social information, prison information, makes it all the better for working as a team, you know, and using that information to safety plan for the women. That's kind of me. Thank you.
I think that we're probably coming to one of the most exciting parts of what we've been doing, which is the service user involvement. We've got a lot of groups on the go. We've had life skills groups, we've got adult literacies groups, NHS, cooking, we've got a safety group coming up. We have, there's a whole load of groups, and I think that now that the evidence is that more and more women are beginning to come to the groups because we're over a year in now, and I think that the women who first started working with us at the very beginning are now beginning to feel really confident enough not only to attend the groups but to say, you know, here's what would benefit me. We have got a centre meeting first Monday of every month where our staff team and women get together. And we say, right, okay, where are we going from here? We eventually want to have women who would be facilitating groups, peer mentoring. I mean, that is our long-term aims, obviously. But I believe that it's absolutely possible that we can do that. We've got a newsletter group that we just started, and our first edition was the Christmas one, and some of you might have seen it. But we were very, very proud of it because it was all women's work. And them coming in and saying, I can't cook, I can't paint, I can't do art, I can't write. You know, it is about identifying women's strengths and building on them for us. And now we are beginning to see that. I'm going to show you some slides just, of some of the activities that we have been doing with women. I think one of the trip to Leeds where we went to a women's justice centre there was fantastic. We got a lot of good ideas out of that. We're also very political as well. Our women, we had a White Ribbon Day and we had 300 pledges that we sent to White Ribbon UK, and it was the women that stood at the stall and took all the pledges. We've had fun days as well, and one of the best days was the Christmas Day when all the staff cooked for the women. And it might sound really, really simple, you know, but it is about respect, it's about safety, it is about collaboration. Women are central to the decision making operationally of the service. And I really now want to hand you over to Tracy, one of our service users, because we could stand here and talk all day, but I think that it's my great pleasure for Tracy to come and see what she has got out of attending Tomorrow's Women.
Hiya, my name is Tracy Angrig. I was first referred to Tomorrow's Women when I came at the end of a DTT order. It's a drug treatment testing order. Initially, I thought it was right for me at the time to get involved with Tomorrow's Women. However, it was not the right time. I just struggled to cope and I struggled to open up and ask for help and put my trust in the services. Sorry. Unfortunately, I returned back to prison. However, this is where I realised that Tomorrow's Women was the right service. It was different. My key worker, Andrea, spoke to Mark, the prison officer, who working at Tomorrow's Women, and asked to check up me, which she did on several occasions, and that, to me, was the right thing. They were concerned, genuine concern for me. So it was for Tomorrow's Women, for me, it was the right place at the right time. And it made me realise that I could make the changes that I had fought so many times that I wanted to do but didn't know how to do. Shortly after my release from prison, the phone call from Andrea made me feel that someone believed in me. And that's when I realised that I could achieve the changes that I had today. and becoming to tomorrow's woman. I'm now making the changes in my life. I generally feel part of tomorrow's woman. I feel safe when I'm there. I get involved. I take part in the newsletter. My opinions and views are listened to and taken on board. I also take part in arts and class, arts and crafts classes and cookery classes. These types of groups have helped me feel relaxed and good about myself. I know that when I come into a class and all my shoes are just left at the front door, anything else doesn't really matter. You're in there, you're done. And that keeps me going. That's what keeps me going back every week, for week for week. So, Andrea encouraged me to enrol in Adventure Trust programme, which we're going to be on the 6th of April. I will be taking part in a week-long course. I'm looking forward to it as it's a bit of time for me. I know I will be discovering new skills and strengths, develop my confidence, problem-solving. I know that there will be times when it will be a struggle, but that is what I'm looking forward to, partly basically pushing myself. How far will I be able to push myself? So that's what I'm looking forward to, basically, that part. And I'm working to get in my own house and learning new skills and gaining more confidence. I want to get involved with some kind of volunteering, and doing things like this will help me to achieve this. So I would like to take the opportunity to thank Andrea, Mark, and obviously Tomorrow's Woman for being there for me and helping me to get to where I'm at today, make the changes in my life, and that's it. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Tracy. That was great. And I was just as nervous as you when I'm up here and I'm looking at all these faces and my mind goes blank, and every single time I do a presentation, I've got notes and I forget to look at my notes. So I just start talking, and then when I go away, I say, oh, should I say that? And I should have said this. Anyway, probably one of the most important parts as well for you as an audience is the outcomes. You know, what are the outcomes for women? How can we evidence, you know, that what we're doing, what we're saying, that we are achieving, we are achieving. And I'm now going to hand over to my service manager, Jim McBride, who needs no notes to talk. And he's going to talk about our logic model and our outcomes and a tracking exercise that we've been doing. So.
I got no notes, and then I bring up a bit of paper. I just want to briefly talk about some of the planning, and more importantly, some of the outcomes. And for me, I'm a service manager, one of four criminal justice service managers in the city. I have been involved working in criminal justice and addiction social work services for the past nearly 30 years. And I want to be clear that the outcomes I want to talk about, a bit of the evidence, it's not just a bit about the changes to women. I think Tracy has done a job about talking about the difference being involved with services can make for women and for people if they want to make the change themselves. And I think fundamentally all we've done is encourage Tracy to make the change. It's up to Tracy to make the change, and she's started to do that. The other bit for me is partly strategic, because it's a bit about having that management head where I don't just have responsibility for Tomorrow's Women Glasgow, I have responsibility for city-wide and specialist criminal justice services. So it covers the drug court, covers the persistent offenders project, it covers the courts, covers prison-based social work, and it covers public protection arrangements in the city. So I'm dealing with what would be deemed to be high risk and difficult to engage people who are caught up in the criminal justice system. One of the key things for me with regards to the planning around this service is multi-agency working, partnership working, and service user engagement isn't new to Glasgow, and it's certainly not new to Tomorrow's Women Glasgow. As if this service is the first time it's actually taken on board. I think what we have done is we've taken a couple of key things, as Anne says, ingredients, and shape them into how we actually work within the city. We already have a number of very experienced and well-managed services, 218, uh, B being one particular one, which was also actually highlighted within the Commission report. Also have a number of partnership arrangements with Glasgow Safety Services, with criminal justice locality teams, with the Fiscal's Office. There's a number of partnerships through the third sector that are already there. But what this model tried to look at, and being involved in the planning arrangements for this model, it was crucial that we had to accept the fact that it was criminal justice focus. It targeted a group of women that we felt were the most chaotic and difficult to engage, but at the same time required a multidisciplinary, multi-agency response. The other key thing was is about how we delivered that. The trauma model was the first time that it's been embedded in criminal justice services in the city, and that was crucial. And the other bit for me was appointments don't work. And I have to be absolutely clear, our experiences is appointments don't work in health in the main for this group of women, and they don't work in criminal justice. So the whole point of our service was to chase women and not give up on women. The whole point was is we talk about a centre. Most of the work is actually out with the centre. We've only been, our story of Tomorrow's Women is only just over 12 months old. So we're in our infancy. We've just been through a pilot phase in conjunction with 15 other projects across the country that were seed funded by the Scottish Government. And the interesting thing about Glasgow's model is we took the decision that it would be a centre focus, but the principle behind it was we would chase women. The other thing that made a difference, NHS, City Council, third sector, are pretty good in Glasgow at working together operationally. We've maybe been not too good strategically and at senior levels with regards to working together, but certainly operationally we have. I think the importance now of going back towards social care and health integration model for the city, the third sector supports, and the work that we've done with ALIOS and the wider council services has been crucial. And I think one of the things I want to concentrate on is although we're talking about Tomorrow's Women Glasgow and the principal model behind this, it has to be taken in context that we're actually trying to join up women who are at the early stages of being involved in criminal justice and the women who have been involved at the far end of criminal justice. And I think the importance about it is that Tracy symbolises is that it doesn't matter how old, how chaotic or how difficult your life's been or who you are, the reality is there's always time for change. And certainly my experience working in addiction is that the recovery agenda has been fundamental, that we know that it takes certainly 10, 15, 20 years of absolute chaos before people start to really seriously consider about making changes in their life. So the centre is there. It complements what's already in existence. It doesn't replace. It doesn't become an either or. It's actually a bit about saying, how do we work? So the whole thing about women engaging with criminal justice through the first bail condition or the first appearance at court, we've got a diversion pilot with Glasgow Safety Services. We've got work with the Drug Court, which has been 10 years now, and the Persistent Offenders Project. Women are hitting the radar through all of these services and for all different reasons. But the big thing for me is that for some of the personal outcomes, we're tracking 15 women as part of the national response, and we've tracked 15 women 12 months prior to them engaging with Tomorrow's Women and 12 months since. And the first 6 months reporting, and this is the reason why I brought the bit of paper up, the whole service was set up with significant pre-planning, particularly around the logic model. It was looking at short-term, medium and long-term aims. It was looking about defining organisational learning as much as the outcomes for women, and more importantly, how we share resources. So apart from what's already been talked about with regards to information sharing, co-location, the whole thing around about joint learning, I think one of the things that's absolutely clear, Andrea and Mark have a particular focus in a specialist area, but it's about how generically people start to learn and about how they actually utilise the experience in the room, so that Mark and Andrea are much more equipped now to understand the issues about mental health, the issues about trauma, but at the same time, the RMA nurses and the social workers within the team are much better understanding now about the prison processes and about the issues around about how do you manage to deal with somebody's accommodation. The 15 women we are tracking, certainly in the first 6 months, we've looked at a number of key themes. And for us, it was actually very much around about dealing with amount of times that they're charged, amount of times that women are in prison, what they're charged for, A&E presentations, and certainly mental health. Just to give you some small examples within the context of the women that we've been working with, two of those 50 women, they now have care of their children. One woman was nominated for a Jobs and Business Glasgow Award. One woman was reduced her A&E presentations. The 12 months before, it was in excess of 110 A&E presentations within 12 months. For the following 6 months, when she engaged with Tomorrow Women, that fell to 24. Predominantly mental health and substance related, but nonetheless, it's the knock-on effect and the cost effect that it has for health services, council services, and third sector services. So it's absolutely clear that the engagement actually has, and if we start to finance this, then it's not just a bit about the cost benefits to the women, more importantly, but it's the knock-on effects to reducing associated costs. And one of the areas that I'm interested in is trying to quantify that much more around about the finance that's involved in terms of the estimated figures for prison, for court time, etc. and stuff compared to where we are now. The tracking exercise, obviously, is receiving information from Police Scotland, Scottish Prison Service, Health Service, Housing, Adult Support Protection and court time. And of the 15 women, 7 women have decreased their offender behaviour from 58 offences to 11. And of those offences, as Anne said, the violence offences, or the offences that are deemed to have a violence association, assaults went from 8 to 1. All of the women, 58% less cases brought to the Procurator Fiscal Service. And basically that's, in numbers terms, that was 68 offences down to 14 for the following 6 months, and 80% less going through court. So even on that comparison just now, and to be fair, I've got a 12-month figure and only 6 months. The second 6 months is due to report, and we're actually due to have the final evaluation completed for April. And it will be made public as well. But one of the things that we've been asked to do is obviously consider what makes a difference in terms of working. I have to say that one crucial area, and I think to be fair, Linda touched on it, was the Scottish Prison Service took quite a lot of difficult flack in the press around about the review of how we manage women, and certainly the new HMP Inverclyde and Edinburgh prisons and how that's been stopped. One thing I will say in public is the Scottish Prison Service have been exceptional in the work and the support they've done with regards to Tomorrow's Women Glasgow. I think it's absolutely clear that what the Scottish Prison Services are doing, and particularly Greenock Prison, because Mark secondment came from a negotiated arrangement with Greenock Prison rather than necessarily the project board for managing women offenders. But I just want to kind of finish on a couple of wee points, and that is really around about the Scottish Prison Service is really understanding the fact is that the community needs to be in the prison, and likewise the prison needs to be in the community. So the whole thing around about the through care officers, the review of how we house and manage prisoners, both male and female in this country, needs to be reviewed. But I think what's happening quite clearly here is that Tomorrow's Women Glasgow, in conjunction with the other evidence that Glasgow's generated, is showing that if you put this in place, folk will respond. Access immediately to information, access to women in prison has made a huge difference. We deal with gate release, we deal with pickups. The bit about chasing people and not giving up on people is absolutely crucial. I know some of the women are saying, Christ, are you never going to leave me alone? But the reality is that all of them, bar none, say, thank you for not giving up on me. It's dead simple. The last thing I want to say is we talked about a safe environment. Women are saying, you're listening to me, you're looking at me when you're talking to me, you talk to me in language I understand, I come in and feel welcome. These are basic human traits that I think managing services we forget about. The whole environment of Tomorrow's Women Glasgow is deemed to try and deliver an environment that is as far away removed from a NHS site or a social work council site or a prison site. It's actually about women taking ownership of the site and making it their own. So the environment and how women are spoken to, how women are treated, this is all the service user feedback we're actually dealing with. And the last thing I would say is it's been an absolute pleasure to develop, and certainly the next 12 months is about how we enhance this model. But I think what's been absolutely clear is, and at least Anne acknowledged a bit about the planning, we got more right than we got wrong. I think we underestimated the sheer level of complexity, but I do think SPS and housing providers, and I have to thank the Wheatley Group, and I think without a shadow of a doubt, homelessness has been a huge area for us as well. And I just wanted to say that the evidence and the outcomes, both for women and organisationally, will be made available, will be much more publicised. But the assurance I can give you is that this model just literally complements what's already there, doesn't replace. And on that, I just really want to say that of my 30 years being involved in so many pilots, I have to say I have taken no more pleasure than the last 12 months and certainly the 12 months planning. I'm co-located within the Tomorrow's Women office as well, and it's an absolute honour and pleasure to be part of seeing a team develop, and the staff group themselves are fundamentally what makes it work. So on behalf of everyone, thank you very much for listening.